sunny. Yesterday my life was filled with rain. Sunny, you smiled at me and really eased the pain.
Oh boy, you know what that music means. Level 20, episode 13, Sunny. I'm Connor Smith, level one summer intern. We got Josh Berman and Friedel Cody as always, and coming back for round three now, Kyle Decker giving us his take on this year. Go watch the movie if you haven't already. Podcast.level1.ski. And just a reminder, this movie will only be free until 11/10. That's November 10th when our final episode, Romance, comes out. So go check it out. By the time you are hearing this, we will have just premiered the new movie over the past weekend. Just because you missed out on the Denver world premiere does not mean it's too late to see it in a fun setting with all your friends. We got Salt Lake coming up, Bozeman this week, all sorts of premieres all over the place. So go check out the events page on the website and find something near you. And if you don't see something near you, then reach out and figure out how to host your own show. We're doing a rerun of some of our specialty hoodies and maybe a few new variants too. So keep an eye out for that in the next couple of weeks. As always, we got our Spy collabs out for sale. We got our new Level 1 X Wells Lamont collabs out for pre-order. You can go pre-order the movie now and we'll be shipping those in a couple of weeks. So go find something on the website if you want to support independent filmmaking and podcasts like these. You can also go rate or review us on iTunes. And send us any questions if you have them. Email them podcast@level1productions.com. I think that's it. Here's Kyle Decker. Enjoy, y'all.
Sunny, thank you for the sunshine you gave. Sunny, thank you.
Headphones, beers, babies.
Yeah.
Yeah, your baby made an appearance on the Refresh Pod. Just a little bit, but
yeah, I heard that. Like, I was randomly listening to that and heard some crying in the background.
That was actually Wallish, but we'll let everybody think it was your baby.
It's funny how much
Wait,
kids...
Wait, Wallish, is it your baby? I thought Wallish was your baby.
We're rolling. Level 20, episode 13 now. Moving on down the line.
Home stretch.
Kyle Decker joining us once again. What's up, Kyle?
What's up?
Welcome back.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle, great to have you back.
Thanks for joining us, Kyle. We've been kind of all over the place, but let's like start talking about the movie first off here with this one. As we've long established now, Mike Hornbeck, your fucking boy, has the opening seg in this movement. In this movie. Has the opening seg in this movie.
It was a full-on movement. Come on now.
The Wreck of Movement. I mean, we could talk about a bunch of stuff from it. There's Anchorage clips. There's Denver clips. I heard there's a good story about the sculpture garden that there's like a rainbow rail at. What you know about that, Kyle?
I actually don't remember. Friedel's smiling, so what do you...
I'm just thinking about other stuff.
I'll tell a story. I got a story. So the sculpture garden here in Denver is something that we drove by on a regular basis. And, I mean, long before that was even in the realm of our capabilities, either as skiers or to get any kind of speed, we always looked at that, or at least I always looked at that.
Mm.
I was like, oh, man, like that thing is just ripe for the picking if we, A, could get speed, and B, even knew what to do with it. But during the blizzard of 2006, which was real time, is that mm-hmm. right? December mm-hmm. 2006. Steel Spence was living with me, and we looked at that thing like, man, this would be the prime opportunity. We're going to ride our snowmobiles from the townhome in Aurora all the way through the city of Denver to get to the sculpture garden, because that would be the only way that we could actually get speed. And yeah, we seriously considered it, and we opted out because we're like, man, like that's just like too big a deal, cruising around on snowmobiles in that park. The next day, driving by, there were sled tracks all over the park. They were just like, damn it. I mean, nobody else was hitting features or anything, right, but somebody clearly was just like shrub in their sled,
mm-hmm.
which would have been so goddamn funny if we were actually out there shooting with sleds, doing tow-ins in that park. But anyway, fast forward a few years, the stars aligned. We had early season snowstorm. Hornbeck and Tim McChesney were in town. Eric Sayo was shooting photos. Decker, you and I were getting after it. Friedel, were you around as well for that?
I was.
You were. Full team mode going on. And yeah, everything came together and we had the technology and the wherewithal to make it happen. And that was something that I was really excited to cross off my list. I actually remember calling Eric Sayo and telling him it's like go time for that particular feature. And that was the bait that got him to come out from Utah to shoot.
Sick. Was that the end of the story?
Yeah, that was the punchline. Couldn't you tell? I mean, I hear applause in the background. Come on. That's the best story I got.
Well, that'll be in post. We'll put in the canned laughter.
Studio audience goes wild.
But anyway.
Starting out strong.
But for me, seriously, that was like something that I looked at for a number of years, and to actually be able to like cross something off your list that you drive by on a daily basis.
Yeah.
It was kind of cool.
Not as cool as doing it with sleds, but still pretty cool.
No doubt. And then we opened the floodgates on that whole sculpture park because I think it showed up in Poor Boys shot it later that year, which was in the heyday of these like calling out other crews for hitting your shit and stuff like that. And, then it showed up, I want to say, in a Step movie, like maybe a couple years later, maybe. Mm. And then, I don't know, a whole bunch of movies. But anyway, yeah, the seal had been broken.
Sick. Decker, I know you're super proud of this thing. What stuck out to you on the rewatch? What'd you go hard for?
I mean, I mentioned this before, you even look at his Turbo segment, but Hornbeck worked so hard for so many years and was so loyal to Level One, put in his dues, and finally his kind of time, just like he earned it, time to shine, opening segment. And for me, watching that over and over again, like every clip still stands and would stand in a movie pretty much today. And I mentioned this to you guys right before this podcast, but I feel like that segment's like, and it sounds cliche, but like, it's like fine wine. Like, dude, it almost ages better. Like, same exact tricks, and you rewatch it, and you realize how strong it was for 2012. Was that 2012?
2012.
Yeah. And dude, he worked so hard, and he was so excited to be a part of this, and so excited to have a segment that opened a Level One movie because he was always, you know, he came up as a back in Turbo and real time as the, you know, the rookie and watched the Level One movies, and now he's the big star. Not that he wasn't before, but this is like his big big time to shine. Tell the whole world about it.
Tell the whole world about it. Yeah, it was like a little, I don't know, an exclamation point on his like tenure with us. It's something that he like was leading up to that segment, and you're right that it holds water today, just in a lot of ways.
Style
based on
first.
How, like, yeah, it's not like, oh, he did the first crazy dub 12 thing, or like whatever in that part, but it's more just this, I don't know. It's kind of what Hornbeck's
smooth,
been known for
good
all
style.
Along.
It's all the stuff you want to see.
Who went on the Japan Jib trip? Who was the filmer there?
I went in with that crew and ended up staying for the POW end of it as well because it was, we had
turning Japanese, Decker.
Yeah, we had Bull showing us around, showing us the spots. And then, I mean, it was Chris O'Connell and Josh Bishop, photographers, along with, you know, the crew of skiers we had. And it was epic. It was at Wallace, Hornbeck, Alex Bellemeyer.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was sort of the pinnacle of the relationship between Level One and Armada. We had a lot of athletes in common, and I was working pretty closely with OC Chris O'Connell, photographer extraordinaire and also co-founder and some sort of like, you know, managing partner at the time of Armada, brand manager to some extent. I mean, definitely a dude who, if not entitled, certainly was calling the shots and running a lot of the actual program over at Armada. But so everything lined up that year to put us all on a couple trips together. And yeah, Japan was definitely one of them. And and like that's still one of my favorite kind of like behind the scenes like moments that you guys captured when the cops busted you guys. And actually, there are two of them. Of course, there's the one where the cops bust you all and take you in. And if you want to tell us that story, and then the second one, which, like, I cannot help but laugh, is O'Connell just, like, talking to the school principal at that spot where you guys were getting busted, and he's, like, basically saying, you can say whatever you want, but you can't speak a word of English, and I'm telling you, we're gonna hang out here and do whatever we want, no matter what you say. And I mean, you said it better than that, of course, but it was just ridiculous.
Yeah, that was probably one of the funnest trips I've been on, just because the crew, we were just vibing good. It was a blast, and I think it showed in the segment. The cop story was good because, you know, I think that was one feature our guides weren't with us, so that we didn't have translators, and or they were, but maybe they just ran because the cops came. But either way, like, we talked to the cops, and it turns out they were, like, very friendly. So then we kind of just, like, you know, had some fun with it and see where it went. But basically, they didn't have our passports. They saw our IDs, which they can't look up, and they, piled us in this paddy wagon and took us away to go get our passports. And everything ended up being all good, but it was just, like, this huge, you know, mass confusion with all the guys. So
you okay?
So we rolled on it, and it ended up just being fun. That was, like, I feel like Sunny was the pinnacle of just, like, playing with people with
the language barrier was insane.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But Chris O'Connell and that other situation at that school, I guess it was, like, dude, just brought out peak OC. Because, I mean, for those that don't know, he's, like, basically a comedian in his own right, especially when it comes to interacting with people. He made, like, a secret tape, a prank tape of prank calls where people would either call his office number and he would fuck with them, dude, or he would call other people. That was circulating for years. That's, like, on the level with any other prank call.
Yeah, Turkey Boys stuff I've ever heard. I mean, yeah, the dude is so deadpan.
That school
on a level.
That school was pretty crazy because, like, I think I don't know if it was before or after that guy was talking to us, but we were just hitting this rail mid school, and we were just like, let's just play dumb. We know we're going to get kicked out, but just play dumb and try to see if we can get a shot before that.
And the language
barrier. We ended up going inside the school and talking with the principal. We, like, took our shoes off and went into this room. We were, like, all bowing, and it was kind of, like, too big of a story to drag out to, like, put in the movie, but it was pretty crazy because we were, like, in this talking to a school principal and these admins, and we're, like, bowing, and but I don't think anyone still really knew what we were saying, but we did end up getting permission, so yeah, so God, O'Connell, I can't say good enough things about going on trips with. He was like a legend back in the, you know, way back in the day, Oakley days and Poor Boys days.
Freeze magazine.
So I always looked up to him, and
photographer.
Going on a trip with him was
more than it was cracked up to be.
More than a dream.
Dude, this wasn't your first trip with him, though, because you.
Yeah, Finland and Russia.
Russia. Yeah, what? We kind of skipped over that in the After Dark podcast, but did you have any good insight on that Russia trip?
Yeah.
I just wanted to, like, bounce that off you because, I mean, that's, like, that was a huge trip for you and that crew. Huge trip for Level One.
Yeah.
Most part in After Dark. And, like, dude, there's got to be some background.
Well, mostly, like, most stressful trip I've ever been on for a variety of reasons. Also, arguably the most memorable trip I'll never forget. But as we're talking about cops, like, our guide Alex was, once again, maybe have your guide with you, because the guide wasn't with us, and we're like, we want to hit this rail, we're hungry, we probably should have just slept in and whatever we were going to do. Anyways, we go to this feature, and these cops roll up to us with, like, the three cops in one car, and they roll up to us and they have AKs around, like, just hanging around their chest, and I'm, like, on the ground fiddling with a dolly, and they're just, like,
standard Russia,
screaming down at me in Russian, and I'm trying to, like, talk to them, and they couldn't understand. It was kind of getting, like, uncomfortable, and this is, like, a couple days after we heard a lot of, like, serious police corruption stories from our friends from there, and I just, like, started pointing at my phone and trying to get our translator on the phone to, like, talk to these police to be, like, but as soon as we, like, started pointing at the phone, they, like, kind of got sketched out. I don't know who they thought was on the line, but they just walked away. Got in their car and left. And we're like, okay. And that was, I mean,
I got Vladdy on the phone.
Yeah.
Did you stick around and get a shot after that happened?
Yeah, we did get a shot. But it was, that was a pretty uncomfortable moment, but.
Wasn't that the quad kink?
Yeah. And that was, that was just such a crazy trip. Like, O'Connell, we rented a van. And O'Connell's like, dude, I'm not driving this van. And I think we had all chipped in and paid a Met to be the driver. And he was like, hell yeah, like, which is good. But, dude, like, getting around, I can't even, like, this is why I said it was so stressful, because it sounds like, going to Russia is like, you can't say, oh, that was so hard. But, like, dude, we go from one spot to the other, and it might be, like, a five-minute drive in the U.S. or 10-minute drive, and it would take... Dude, 2 hours, because the traffic was so insane. And Amet just hung in there and drove us around. And we drive 2 hours to a spot that we had lined up, and there'd be like a car in the landing. We're like, okay, well, next. So there was a lot of like behind the scenes of that where, but in hindsight, you look back, and I think we were working so hard at it that we got like some pretty, pretty cool stuff.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, that segment's certainly one of the standouts of After Dark. Never mind the fact that it's Russia, just in general, it was a really cool, very well done, nicely shot trip.
Thanks.
Yeah,
absolutely.
The best part, of course, was the vodka intro, by the way.
Yeah, the boys got pretty turned on that one.
Wait a second. You told me that was water.
I went out and shot it at, we shot that in Mount Hood. And yeah, we had like, we built a couple like these little like amateur bottle rigs, but all of a sudden we get out there and all the guys are like, dude, we're not going to fake it. I'm not just going to, let's keep it real. Like, so next thing you know, it's like getting a little out of hand, but it was.
You had that top quality Russian standard though, right?
Yeah.
A little more technical info for that side of things real quick. Decker, to elaborate a little bit on your bottle rig. So Kyle actually took it upon himself to saw off the end of one of these Russian standard bottles and then mount it on a piece of wood and then put a tripod mount on that piece of wood. So effectively, like, these kids are picking up this bottle with a false bottom with a camera lens in it to pretend they're chugging it. And there are a couple little moments in there, but it's like one of those little ingenious things.
Real hillbilly.
Movie magic from Decker.
Shitty rigs. I mean, that's movie magic, though.
Yeah.
And, like, that's the kind of
little
bits of ingenuity that, I mean, how else are you going to do that? You know, that's how it's done, man.
So, yeah, back to Hornbeck and Sonny. Real quick, I wanted to get this in because it's, like, I feel like my biggest, I've said this many times, biggest influence for that movie, I very distinctly remember Brady Perrin being around early season, and me and Brady and Hornbeck all hung out at my apartment, drank beers, and watched so many movies and studied so many movies. And I feel like Brady, at least for me and Hornbeck, we had so much preseason talk about feel and vibe for a movie. And I feel like kind of that inspiration was like, so priceless for putting to, I feel hands down that movie's like the best like portrayal of skiing that any Level One movie, like arguably, like I feel like, and that has a lot to do with like Hornbeck and Brady kind of like pushing that whole, like, just cause those guys are skiers and like certainly like artists in their own respect. And it was such a good influence, man.
Brady's
so
definitely an artist that I have a mutual respect for as well. But I didn't know that tidbit, but that's certainly true, because I mean, I think as you started editing, Hornbeck came out to edit his part, but you guys, that was the very first thing that was made for Sonny. And it was you set the entire feel for the movie, because editing is so huge. And I think a lot of people just skimp over that, but editing, you can have the dopest footage in the world and make a completely crap movie. And editing is huge. But with that Hornbeck part, even the way you were setting up those collages,
that
moving
inspired,
around, like, set the whole pace for the entire movie.
I think
movie
that was Hornbeck's idea, and then you guys all of a sudden
that's
were like,
right,
that needs to be
that's
the theme
right
for the movie. Like,
I remember that because your little editing office desk setup was opposite mine. And so I always remember turning around, like looking over your shoulder while you guys were working. And yeah, it was, whether it was your idea or Hornbeck's idea, like that's definitely where the whole collage concept came for. And if I remember correctly, I think you started specifically doing that to introduce or transition into his Japan stuff. Like that's where that like thought process kind of gelled. And yeah, I remember we're all looking at it and then we're straight up, this is what we have to do. This is going to carry the entire movie.
Yeah. That, yeah.
Thanks,
I mean,
Rekha.
Looking back, I still like, God, that's probably one of my, arguably my favorite ski movie of all time. And I'm happy to be part of it. I feel like the soundtrack, the skiing, the vibe, like everything just came together so perfectly. And like, it just worked.
You know, we talked previously about the thought that potentially Refresh was the strongest crew of skiers that we've ever had in a movie. And I think that it's fair to argue that. I think Sunny is potentially the year when we had the strongest just general
well-oiled ship
collection. Well, yeah, certainly well-oiled ship. But I, what I'm trying to get at is between yourself and Friedel and I, like, that was it. There was no outside influence. It was just us three.
And Blake Kimmel a little bit.
And Blake Kimmel, exactly. Blake Kimmel a little bit. But, I mean, that segment was still very self-contained, though.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like, it was the three of us running the whole show. And I feel like each of us played a slightly different role, brought different strengths to the table that very well complemented each other. And that was, like, the best of the best that we all had to offer in turn with each other. And I think that for me was a large part of the success of that film.
And a phenomenal crew as well. Aside from DeLorme having a minimal role, I think that was like,
well, not
huge...
to take away from the crew at all. No way. But
that was like, I mean, obviously a pinnacle for those specific writers as well. Slightly different than the Refresh crew, obviously.
Well, the Refresh crew, everyone was so, it was like a refresh of whole like massive roster of athletes. And then I feel like it ended up being everyone kind of really, really fine tuned their skiing, working with the filmers, working with just getting used to everything just flowed so damn well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we lost Phil Casabone and Henrik Harlow. Obviously they went on to do the B&E. They graduated, so to speak, to do the B&E project. But immediately, like, these people filled, like, Parker White, Chris Logan, and more, like, just filled their shoes, so to speak, so in, like, such a different way, but so immediate.
Yeah.
I think
that's how I found that actually works. You know, the only thing that's constant is change. And as people leave, people will come in to fill those roles. And that's the only way that people can fill them.
Yeah, well, they don't fill them literally because you don't get like a pound-for-pound replacement. No. But you get like...
Different people like, get opportunities is what it is.
Right, but you get like a whole different mode, right?
Sure.
Like you have a completely different style. But, dude, Decker, while this is on the top of my head, I mean, you did... What, three international like rail trips this year? Because you did a super early one to Sweden, and then
Arctic Circle,
Sweden. And then, we did a Helsinki, which at that point I feel like that was our third or fourth.
That was like
Helsinki trip.
You were getting your Finnish visa,
and then Japan,
residency.
Dude, but, it was such a fun time. I feel like that season I was out of the country more than I was in, but. Dude, those were all such fun trips.
Yeah, so there's watching the movie, there's this thing that I remember, and I don't know this firsthand because I've only been told the story, but LJ was new to the crew.
Yeah.
And he joined you in Helsinki, and what, you hit that like 40-foot down rail, maybe the first rail of the trip?
Yeah, the long down rail that McChesney, I think, lip-toed, or one of them. But, dude, LJ.
What did you? What? What?
I know exactly. Yeah, LJ.
Initiation.
He's like such a dedicated. I don't know if anyone doesn't know who LJ is. He's just like way too much energy, super like down for whatever, just loves skiing. And I just wanted to screw with him a little bit. So like he was really trying real hard to get his trick and like in the zone. And I was joking with the boys. I was like, dude, we should mess with LJ a little bit. So I was like, LJ, he got to the top of the rail. I was like, I just want to get a quick cutaway of you like coming up the stairs again. So I was like, can you do that again? He's like, yeah, no problem. Runs down to the stairs, walks back up. And I'd be like, can you do it one more? But like, run up the stairs with like tons of energy and like have like a feel and vibe like, and dude, I had him go like a couple times and I was like, dude, I'm just messing with you.
Didn't you get somebody else in on it? Like, yeah, dude, this is gonna be a good shot.
Yeah, probably McChesney. Who was also McChesney and Spencer on that trip.
Yeah,
Rally Cheddar. Yeah,
that's because there's actual real shots of him like going down to the bottom and then running up the stairs as fast as he can, and you can hear Decker's audio in the background. Like, no, that was pretty good, but like I think we should try another one where you just have like a little more like passion. He's like, yeah, totally.
Can you get your knees up a little higher? Like that would really just make the shot.
But yeah, that was a fun trip, and that guy was hungry.
I'm curious how he got involved, because LJ's pretty well established at this point, no?
Yes, yeah. He had been established, like he had been in the Meathead films for a while, because he was also a kid from Vermont.
Right.
So he was one of those guys, and then he was like line farm team for a while. So we're talking this year and the years surrounding this are like probably peak traveling circus. And I think LJ was getting involved in that. You know, as was like Ian Compton and some other line guys, but
well established. But he was with Poor Boys, right?
Right.
Yeah, like, he was with Poor Boys.
That's what I'm thinking of. And like, he's got Poor Boys parts right around this time.
I remember like Jay Lev. Like we were at an SIA and we were talking to Jason Leventhal, who was the leader of line at that time before Malchek stepped in. But he was like, "Yo, why don't you guys shoot with LJ?" And I was like, dude, we're kind of good, man. Like, we got Will. We got, I don't know. I just felt like we didn't.
50 other dudes.
Yeah. And then, so I don't know how he stepped into, like, I mean, Poor Boys basically swooped him up probably after we had that conversation. And then he had a really huge debut part with them. And then, I don't know. Don't remember how.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly. I feel like I was in touch with him at that point. Yeah. There's probably some conversation that I had, but I don't think there was anything special necessarily, but clearly he was doing some really cool stuff, brought a lot of energy to the table for sure. And yeah. Unfortunately, that was a very quick end to his season, that Helsinki trip.
Yeah, he's barely in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did we even put that crash shot in the movie?
It's in the intro. It's in the intro. He was like,
oh yeah,
starting things off with a bang and ending my season here. Was he doing a switch six or a forward six?
I think we were doing follows and he got like
dub 12. Like I don't
he got like a 450 easy on a rail and he was like just so fired up. He's like, I'm going for 630. So we
Decker,
did a couple.
I'm gonna run up a couple times to get that shot and then I'm gonna go for six.
So we did a couple of follows and he over rotated or whatever and his knee smashed into the bottom support of the rail, and dude, I went up to him and like that you could like basically see the indent of the rail on his knee, and he's like, dude, I'm so sorry, like I know if you guys want to stay and like keep shooting and get shots, I'm like, dude, you're going to we gotta go to the hospital like right now. So we went to like Finnish hospital and they fixed him up, but same thing, like he was like wanted to call his parents and he's like, dude, can I use your phone, like I'll pay you back for like, you know, cell phone bit, but he's like the nicest guy. But he took it like a man, but he went down real hard. And I think that was the end of that season for him.
Yeah, absolutely. That was like a 8 to 10 month recovery. I mean, he shattered his kneecap.
He what?
Yeah, he shattered his kneecap, and they had to surgically just like stitch the whole thing back together, like all the pieces. That is a thing.
I know it's a thing, yeah. But how Decker just explained that story, I would have never guessed that that's like one of the most violent injuries you can do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, did you hear me? He says, ow, 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 ow. That's his response.
He's like, we gotta go to the hospital, but he was like trying to convince me like to stay and shoot the. I'm like, dude, no, like nobody wants to hit a rail after that.
He was probably borderline in shock at that point too, because that is that traumatic an injury.
Yeah.
Steph Osborne, Mr. Tom Walsh's fiance, she did the same. Is that correct?
Yeah, on the S rail at Park City, and that
she was also doing a six on. Is that no? Maybe, yeah. No, maybe not.
She was.
But
gnarly injury. Super.
Yeah.
Super long recovery.
Jesus. Sure. Well, good thing that he bounced back all right, because we all know where it goes from there. But, yeah. What about Eric Pollard, another newcomer this year?
On the topic of these conversations with Jay Leventhal saying, you should shoot with LJ. You should shoot with this person. You should shoot with that person. So a little bit of backstory. Jay Lev and I go way back, and as did Pollard and I. Like, I have memories of skiboarding with Eric Pollard at Killington in like 98, maybe. Damn. Something like that. Oh yeah, and him doing like Misty Fives off these little side hits on a hardback at Killington when like inverts weren't even allowed. But so anyway, obviously Eric Pollard at that point.
Wait, you were skiboarding too?
Shh.
Get the details here.
No,
I'll set this scene.
Yes, I've probably skiboarded about 8 to 10 days total in my entire life, including that was just some sort of like fun day out with Jay Lev and friends or something on some line skiboards. But yep, I'll own it. I did it. It was great. It was fun. I mean, I was popping 720s off of like little tiny moguls, and it was this new fun thing. And my mogul skis weren't allowing me that same freedom. So anyway.
Oh, no shame in that. That was hot. Yeah. That was a hot movement at the time.
It was fun. It was cool. Anyway, so Eric Pollard, obviously at that point by 2012, was a heavy hitter in the industry. He had accomplished pretty much all you can. Style still resonates today very clearly, and somebody who I think everybody had a lot of respect for. And he had obviously made his own movies and worked with a bunch of other crews on and off. And I don't recall the most recent project that he had been in at that point, but I feel like...
Well, it's the Nimbus movies.
Sure, but I don't recall, like, you know, when the most recent one was. Because the gist of this conversation, Jay Lev hit me up at some point, probably fall or early season, and said, hey, you know, Pollard would really benefit from being involved in... another like major production company's movie this year. What do you guys think of working him into the mix? And this would involve, he's going on his own trips and doing some of his things, so he could potentially give you access to that stuff. And if you can bring him on a couple trips, that would be really cool. He'd be excited. And I was like, well, that sounds cool. Let me talk to him about it, because it's one thing to hear this from a team manager. It's another thing to hear it from an athlete entirely. I mean, that's definitely been my experience over the years, is that these things need to come from the right place. Like, yeah. It needs to be something that he's actually interested in. And I mean, there were a few other random calls that we had around that time, because I think not for nothing, like the level one crew was viewed as this really hot topic, and people wanted some sort of
placement.
Well,
that's a store in the mall.
Well, yes, but you see, okay, I understand that. But
same thing, though.
But no, like we were, it was a thing, and you know, brands wanted to get involved, and it's like, well, it's really cool that Jay is calling me and suggesting this, but you know, how does Eric Pollard actually feel about it? Because that's really the most important thing. But
yeah,
spoke to him. He was down. I know, Friedel, you probably had a conversation or two with him.
Yeah, I don't know if it was in the early season. I mean, I ultimately ended up filming with him in the second half, or, you know, the spring, basically.
Sure.
But yeah, I think that was crucial for us. I do remember being like, yeah, does Lion want this? Or like, is this like a mutual thing? Like, does he have interest in me? Because I didn't want this like pay.
You can't force it.
Force guy.
No,
especially with
not.
Like somebody like Pollard, who's a well-established legend at that point. I mean,
yeah.
I don't use the word legend too lightly, but he was like been around since the dawn of Twin Tips and established, like, did so many firsts in skiing, and somebody that had garnered a lot of respect.
It's a word you can use to attach to Pollard. I think he's earned that.
But he actually had a really good year filming on his own with his own filmers. He went to Austria for a month,
Japan
for, you know, many weeks,
and then BC.
But we ended up kind of getting a couple heli days at the mid end of April and having a seat for him. And we called him up, and of course he was like, anyone's down for that call.
Yeah.
So
do you want to get in the heli?
So it was, he drove up from Oregon to meet us in Pemberton, and it was Parker White, Wiley Miller, and Eric Pollard. And we had two or three really fun days. And we were all just like feeling it so much, like had such a great time together. So afterwards, he was like, yeah, like that was really fun. Like, we should do something else. So when I got back to Salt Lake, I then went to Mount Hood to film with him in May. Just like mano a mano.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, home turf.
Just you and Eric.
I think that Friedel is like the perfect filmer out of our crew to mesh with Pollard. I feel like that worked out pretty damn good.
Well, and also worked out pretty damn good on the sense that you got a pow day there, which is so weird seeing like Hood pow clips. But I mean, it's sick. Like, what was that like?
Yeah, that was funny because I had been in Salt Lake for a couple days in early May before going to Hood. And it was like 75 degrees. We were doing some landscaping and it was like, oh yeah, spring is here. So then I go to Hood, fly to Hood. He picks me up, go to his house. And he's like, dude, it's going to be a pow day tomorrow. Like, we're waking up at 4:30 in the morning or something. And I was like, what? Like, no. What?
Dude, it's summer. Get over it.
Yeah. I was just like, no. You got to be kidding me. I thought this is behind us.
Like, I'm looking at sunset shoots, not sunrise shoots.
Yeah, straight up. I mean, you go to Hood in the spring and you think, yeah, sunset, yeah. Like these beautiful, Columbia River sunsets. But yeah, I was like, fucking A. Because Pollard, you know, and I didn't want to be like, no, we're not doing that. Because, you know, it's Pollard.
Damn.
And like, he's actually like very serious when it comes to filming, like in skiing. I mean, he knows how to like get it done. But yeah, we woke up early, drove up there in the dark. And because I think the part of the urgency too was that we knew it was going to warm up. It's May, so like we had to hit that pow like first run.
Does it?
But yeah, we got like he did a zero off that like little corner step down and a pow slash 180 and like pretty good May pow for sure. And then the rest of
it don't look like May.
It looks like it's smoky powder for sure. Yeah, I like had almost totally forgotten about that. But then I was staying with him and Hood River, which is, well, outside Hood River, but in the farm country there. But just like, oh, man, staying on that side of Hood, it's just paradise. All the apple pear blossoms in the orchards and stuff. And the bees. Yeah.
And the birds.
Tucked it's some of that in the just plan. Like living in paradise.
But, I mean, it was just him and I. We ended up having, like, 8 days in a row of sunshine, so did a bunch of features and actually collabed with Tanner Hall, Phil Casabon, and Henry Carlo for this step over jump that they had set up in the backcountry there. They were filming for Education of Style, actually, and they had built this like perfect trampoline jump step over. And Pollard was basically like, yo, we're gonna do this with you guys. And I mean, it was like this, like, I just remember the day that we sessioned with him. I'm like, man, this crew will never be like a crew ever. Because Pollard's like, dude, I haven't like skied with T-Hall since I don't even know when.
Since 2002. And it was
like, there's Tanner Hall and Eric Pollard. No, seriously.
Yeah.
Probably since like 2002.
Yeah. No.
It's like, there's Tanner Hall and Eric Pollard. Like, just like these two bona fide ledges. And then you got Casabon and Henrik just tossing dubs and like all sorts of like variations on that jump. And Pollard got so into it, and T-Hall was into it too, they're like, we got to do dubs on this stuff. Like, this is our only chance to try a dub in, like, the backcountry, pretty much. I think that's how Pollard felt, because he's like, you have to be with the right people to inspire you to do it.
Yeah.
So he tried a really sick dub, but landed on his head. It's in the intro of Sonny. Mm. And he was like, nope, that ain't for me, dog. He was actually like, yeah, he jacked his neck up pretty good. But that was, not really enjoyable experience. The funny thing about it was, like, coming to editing, we actually used that Sixto Rodriguez song before his documentary came out. We were on, like, the hipster tip with this unknown musical artist from Detroit that had never made the mainstream. So I think one of our friends, maybe it was Mark or Mom.
I think it was Mark.
Yeah.
Yeah, shout out to Mark Rauschenberger and all our friends for, like, I'd say it's, like, the best soundtrack Level One's had, but shout out to the friends who are, like, leaking all these songs to us, because we're not all sitting in an office being like, this is the sick, like, there's really good inspiration from friends, and I feel
takes
like...
takes a village.
Yeah. But I did a really initial cut on that part to that song to see if he wanted to, you know, if he liked it. Put it up on Vimeo late at night, didn't password protect it, and then I wake up in the morning.
Oh, no.
And Furman's like, yo, dude...
It's got 10,000 views.
Pollard edit you made is, like, live for anyone that follows.
It's a Vimeo staff pick, yeah. People.
And I was like, my fucking heart sank. I was like, no, no. I felt so bad. I felt bad, worse for him, too, because he had given us a lot of footage to use for that. And I was
it didn't
like,
leak oh, too bad, though, did it?
No, it was like a couple hundred views. But
did Pollard know it even leaked?
Yeah, I told him. I was like, dude, I have... like, this thing went up password protected for like 10 hours while I was sleeping, and he's like, ah, yeah,
whatever.
Don't sweat it, dude. Yeah, it was all good. But that was like to this day, I got burned by the fire. Like, I like double, triple check anytime I put up like a preview video on Vimeo. I'm like, all right, password protected.
Now who can it's watch all this video? Automated, it so is. You actually have to like make it public, you have to try.
They knew
doesn't
that.
Stop my anxiety from controlling me. No, I feel you, no. Friedel. Like, so, that shit is so
nerve-wracking. Pollard was, I mean, it was a one-and-done situation, I think, and kind of a one-off. But he fit really well into that movie.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You guys can correct me if I'm off course here and we can redirect. But Decker, you went on the Sweden trip this year?
Yeah, to... it was like just early season. I think that's
like
when we
December.
Got
December,
November, maybe
November. Yeah,
and that's that was
we were
like
just like
the
really,
LSM SIG clips.
We were just it was with Nicholas Erickson, Will Wesson, and SIG, and it was like right that summer. Obviously, we were so geared up into this movie, and it was the big DSLR revolution. So I was just all fired up to get out and shoot. So we ended up going. We were going to shoot in Sweden. We flew into Stockholm, took a 10-hour train up to Ara, so I'm going to pronounce that wrong. And then Nicholas and Tim Lloyd, a photographer, Will Wesson, and Sig and I drove like 14 hours north to...
Going to get a shit ton of fuel.
Eventually to a place called Kiruna. And we stopped in a few towns on the way up and... It's a crazy way.
Good pronunciation, by the way, on that.
Yeah.
Well, Oh, I have a funny story about that, but I'll get into. But we stopped in this little small car town that actually is where they do all like BMW and random car testing, audio plug. Hmm. And we had like got a couple shots there. It was really, really, really scraping. But we had a local newspaper come out and they wrote an article about us. And then we went up to Kiruna. And I don't even know if we got a ski shot in Kiruna. I got some dope, what do you call it?
Northern
Lights shots, yeah. But really, really cool story now that as the Level One story continues. We were all at this pizza shop having a beer, pizza, and there was a table full of skiers. You could just tell they were skiers next to us, but like, I'm guessing like, you know, we're so removed from nowhere. These guys are never going to know whatever. I swear to God, I heard them say... Kyle Decker, Will Wesson. And I was like, no way. And I looked over and these guys came over and introduced ourselves. It ended up being Was it LSA? It was the Bunch Crew. Dude, and we ended up like having a couple beers with them, and then we were like, I think we like carpooled to a late night fast food restaurant, but it's like the most random. I mean, we, like I said, we flew and we were so far in the into the Arctic Circle, like no way nobody even knows what level one is. And here's this like core ski crew that just like,
we're out. It's going to go be in the movies the next couple of years.
We're out partying, and that's, yeah, segue into them kind of becoming the next generation. But it was just a, that's a random, random little story.
That's wild.
That is pretty wild.
Yeah, it's a mining town in the Arctic Circle.
It is a small world, man. Yeah. Like,
that's where you also went to, that's where they do the real ice hotel. I think a lot of other places do it, but that's where, like, there's an actual entire hotel made out of ice, and we got a shot there. We went and just kind of like, they weren't open yet, but they let us walk around and set up a little very small jib there. But yeah, that was our road trip. We thought we weren't getting anything, but in hindsight, we got a couple cool clips and met some people that ended up being friends down the road.
You met the future.
The future. We drove into the future.
Berman, you went to Europe again this year?
I did. So kind of skipped over the story a couple years prior. I think it was iTrip year. To make a long story short, I had a big trip scheduled to Russia, and that was with Wiley Miller and Josh Bibby and Tanner Rainville. And the snow is terrible. And we finally pulled the plug, I want to say like 2 or 3 days before, and photographer Jeff Krikko that we were working with at the time, he scrambled and connected the dots with Port du Soleil, which is a huge group of resorts in Switzerland and France. And they hooked us up, and we ended up going there for a few weeks and definitely kept in touch with those people because it was such an awesome place and such a great relationship to have. So we tried to rekindle that fire this particular year. And this time around, it was Parker White and Chris Logan and Wiley Miller making a return, I think. And did we have a photographer? I don't remember.
Yeah, but I don't know who it would have been.
Who was it? Well, anyway. Had somebody. Yeah. Maybe Krikko came back.
It was probably like a Krikko or
that
was
it. Yeah, anyway. So yeah, I mean, that was Port du Soleil, Champeray, Switzerland, round two. Which was awesome. I mean, it's just such a beautiful place. The Dent du Midi, it's a huge, crazy, the midday teeth, as it translates to.
Was that Parker and CeeLo's first Euro trip?
You know, maybe it was.
It kind of sounds like Dad Abroad with the Kids.
that's kind of what it was, to be honest. Yeah, in fact, like there's a bar called the Crevasse, and that was like the late night watering hole that was... Yeah, you know, probably a half mile walk from where we were staying, and yeah.
Oh, I wish we had Parker here to tell this story. Are you going to that train trip?
Oh my god, Parker! Well, Parker probably could tell it in a more humorous way for sure.
Give it a shot, though.
But he might not remember all the details because I think that was part of the problem. So anyway, our last night there, we actually were going from Champeray to a place in Austria, and this was another like last minute scramble where plans had been changed based on just people bailing on us and snow conditions and what have you. But you know, as previously explained, like everything in Europe we found is connected with trains, and that was the mode of transport going from point A to point B. And if you actually can read the schedules and figure things out, like, and actually show up for your trains on time, then it usually is a pretty seamless process. But when everybody stays out getting wasted until 5, the process loses its seamlessness.
And that was a one drink situation. There was some live music.
Yeah, live music. Let's go check it out.
Wiley was trying to get everyone to go out on the carrasse for just a drink last night.
Yeah.
Last night in town. There's some live music.
Yeah. So when you miss the first train in your like 5-train itinerary day, that really sets the dominoes falling, if you will. And I remember having to like drag these dudes out of bed. They were not happy. I think there is a shot in Parker's segment of him curled up sleeping on the train. And
the way Wiley tells this story, it was like all of a sudden they had to get a 8 a.m. train or something like that.
It was still dark, man. So it was definitely before 8 a.m.
So they, right. Well,
but it didn't make a difference at that point.
Yeah, yeah. They had probably been asleep for 2 hours and waking up, and like Josh is like shaking Wiley, get the fuck up. Like, we got a train to catch. We got to go to Austria. What the fuck are you doing? He's like, no, dude. Let's catch the next train. I'll be behind you guys. I'll see you guys there. Dude, did no interest in going. But.
Well, and there was a little more on the back end, too, because there was another trip that we were supposed to have gone on that we got kind of screwed, and it got canceled. And I had to beg and plead for us to stay for another couple of nights in Champeray. And we were staying in, like, somebody's grandmother's apartment. And, like, we had to go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This was not me being a dick. This was
No. I was never suggesting. I didn't mean to suggest you're being a dick. But you were being very serious about the situation. And there was these two different human beings right now. There's one that had been taking shots of rum or whatever, and one that was trying to catch a train on time to go across the Alps,
trying to put together a ski movie, and the other's crawling out of the bar, living off the buzz.
So actually, I'm gonna skip back in time really quickly. So it was actually on this trip there was like a semi pow day that Wiley and I went out for. And I think Parker and Chris were probably suffering from another day of the crevasse. And when we got back that afternoon, walk into the condo, and these guys are like, yo, we got the movie name, we got the vibe, we got the track for the teaser, the opener. Like, it's called Sunny, and this is it, and this is how we're going to do it. Really? And those guys laid it all out right then and there. Like, this is what we did today. What did you guys do today? It's like, well, we didn't get any shots. We just hiked around for 8 hours. But thank you for this. And straight up, like, those dudes just had this epiphany of, like, everything that they wanted to see and feel out of the movie, which was, you know, a couple months into production at that point. But it was like, yes, this is exactly what we're looking for. This is exactly what we need. Like, you guys just took such a weight off of our proverbial shoulders here, and just like, this is it. So fuck yeah. And
damn,
yeah, it was amazing. Like, I've never been like handed so much on a silver platter. Well,
I don't think that had happened before, and I don't think it's happened since.
No. Yeah. I mean, that was just like this one time where everything just gelled. These guys just had it. It was like, any other time you guys want to take a day off and just come up with
that. That's the opener song, the Sunny song. Yeah.
Dude, what a huge contribution to the movie those two. I mean,
100%.
Not this movie, but massive. Just to Level One, those guys brought in some serious energy, and like also all the like the vets that we've been shooting with. I feel like they kind of lit a fire under them, but like it just brought a whole new energy of these two young kids that were just going ham, partying hard, skiing hard, like.
Oh, it's for like, sure. Those guys are on the list of the most influential and impactful in the history of Level One.
Oh, yeah.
Bar none. Absolutely. But
and hilarious. But, like,
of course. But on this particular day that we're talking about, not so much, because they were just completely fucking out of it. And I had to...
We're back to the train now?
Yeah, we're back to the train.
We're back to the travel day. Travel days are easy. You can party all you want before travel days.
Until this one. So, yes, we missed the first train, and we got on, like, the next train that might have been, like, 10 minutes later. So it was, like, no big deal. However, there was a difference between the routes of these two trains to the point where we ended up looking out the window and seeing Tim Lloyd, the photographer, who did get on the first train, standing at the stop that we were supposed to get off at. But, you know, this train that we were on just blew on by, and we're like,
sorry, Tim.
But maybe this is good because we're getting ahead of Tim.
Oh, that is your answer. Tim Lloyd was the photographer.
Dude.
Yep. Yep. There we go. Yep.
What a good guy right there.
Yeah.
Best dude. But, and of course, like, cell phone technology is just not happening at this point. And,
Well, it was happening. I just don't think you had the
well,
the
not Euro for us, connection. Though. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. For us, it was not happening. Yeah. And the...
I think cell phone technology in general was very much happening.
For me and this crew, not so much on this given day. Payphones come into the picture. Really? Oh, my God, yes. With those goddamn Euro calling cards. So anyway, yeah, we missed that train. We're like kind of hopeful that we're still going to get to the right place at the right time. We do not. It just becomes this absolutely gross misadventure of us just like going to the wrong places and the wrong times, taking buses to connect. Also, we found out that it happened to be Carnival, which is like this huge, crazy, like European-wide like party weekend where for one, things are shut down. For two, everybody's drunk. For three, people are wearing costumes everywhere. We're talking like the most ludicrous shit you've ever seen. We end up going to
Liechtenstein.
Yes, Liechtenstein. And man, and it was like kind of heartbreaking for me because I've got so much luggage that I'm towing around that I can't actually really shoot what's going on. And there are so many things. It's like, man, the thing I just saw, I fucking wish I could have shot it because this was just this unreal moment. But it's like, no, I've got like 150 pounds of gear. But I did have like a 5D around my neck that I was like snapping a couple quick clips here and there. But yes, we end up in Liechtenstein, which Parker and crew didn't even realize was a country. And they thought these people were fucking with them. And oh, we're on a bus at this point, mind you.
Like, not as fun.
A bus tour of Liechtenstein trying to get to Flockwinkel, this place in Austria, Absolute Park Flockwinkel. They'd offered to host us and hook things up. Anyway, we finally arrive at this train station, like probably 12 hours after we were supposed to, and try to get a taxi following these, like, you know, written on a napkin directions that I have to the, I guess it's like the employee housing or something like that. The employee housing at Flockwinkel. And there's a fucking blizzard going on. And our taxi driver is driving a minivan. The dude must be like 16, 17 years old. Like, should not have been driving a taxi. And he gets confused and he ends up trying to drive up a cat road.
No.
Because what was not clearly communicated enough to anybody was our lodging was like at the top of the mountain. So we'd missed our opportunity when the lifts closed at 3 p.m. and now it's like 4 in the morning and we're trying to get to the fucking top of the mountain.
And he's following his GPS or whatever.
Yes.
Trying to drive you up the cat road.
In a blizzard, in a minivan. And yes. And there is footage because at this point, like all my bags are in this minivan, so I got some free hands. And this dude gets stuck and then he's like, okay, like he does not speak much if any English, and we end up having to put on chains, and this dude has never put on chains before, so he puts
chains. Not gonna fucking help you on a cat road, but well, okay.
Well, we were hopeful because we didn't know the answer either,
right?
Like, this guy's like, no, like we can go up here, and we're like, sounds good, kind of, I guess. And so he doesn't know how to put the chains on, and he like halfway puts them on and then puts this thing in gear and sucks the chains like up into the transmission of this minivan, and all of a sudden the whole thing just goes like to a stop, and the dude starts like borderline crying, and he gets on the phone with his boss, and like it's just like, oh god, like clearly we're not going up any further. We hiked
with all your gear,
with all of our gear.
How long did that take you?
I mean, I remember roughly. It being hours, but maybe not. And to be fair, so maybe it wasn't like the top of the mountain, but it was like a lift ride up to like call it the midway point or whatever. Like it was clearly on the mountain where pedestrian like taxi cab traffic was not gonna go. And we had to hoof it up there with all of our stuff. And of course,
Jesus,
like
dude.
Me carrying the most stuff and being the most out of shape, like everybody else was up there long before I was. Finally made it up there at some point. And then we end up chilling at Absolute Park Flockwinkel for a week, and I think we pretty much skipped the park entirely because conditions were pretty good, and we ended up hitting a bunch of backcountry booters and such. Parker got a really sick cab 7 and a cab 9 on this one jump, shot out of a tree, and then Wiley entertained all the local folks with a inbounds line,
yeah,
nice little cliff air and full on European vibes. Good trip. Really good trip.
Yeah, super good trip. Yeah.
Hell of a story.
Yeah, man. And there's this one.
Every
moment.
Single person, I will say, because I've heard that story from every person on that trip.
Sure.
Like, San, Tim Lloyd, maybe. And everyone has a slight different variation.
Oh, sure. Sure. Sure.
That's like, what makes it a good story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. No, it's.
Oh, just different perspectives. Yeah. At one point,
I got the Matrix, like, 3D perspective. On
At one point, I definitely remember there were people at a bus stop launching off fireworks in front of us. And another time where we're, like, literally running to catch a train. And this was, like, the moment, like, in terms of, like, the cinematic epic moment that I wish I could have captured with my eyes. Because, like, the guys are all running in front of me because, once again, they're a lot faster than I am with all this luggage. And there's a conductor on a train waving, like, bye-bye as the doors are closing while we're, like, feet away, full sprint. And, like, everybody just drops their luggage and just, like, collapses. And I'm just, like, right behind everybody witnessing this moment. It's like, oh, dear God. Like, that. I mean, that sums everything up in a single moment right there.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It was crazy.
Should have put the GoPro on.
Oh, dude.
Kyle, do you remember that another story that popped up in my head? In Whistler, in the March, racing out to that jump in the burn with the boys, with Parker and CeeLo. And,
yeah.
Who else had to be there? Wiley.
Parker, CeeLo, Wiley, Rainville.
Same crew, same crew. Same exact crew. Mm.
Those are some of the – that was a really good, like, backcountry – You were posted up there for a while there at Pemberton Mountain Lodge, but I feel like you kind of headed up that. I was up there for maybe a couple weeks, but you really took the reins on the Whistler backcountry at that point.
Yeah, well, I had done the foray the year before with Wiley and Rainville, so that was a super good trip as well. One of the biggest snow years ever, but Whistler is obviously fabled, so.
You've seen enough snowboard movies to really like.
But you broke the ice for level one.
Actually, technically you did, but with that trip with Amet and DeLorme.
Mm. Yeah, and Hornbeck. But we went into like Brandywine Falls. I feel like you really did some exploring.
No, it was,
and we did Brandywine Falls and Rutherford.
We did like the Dan Treadway tour for a month, which was a little different experience for sure. Mm.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that was eye-opening. And it was like definitely one of those things was like, this has been here the whole time, like, and we knew about it and just never came, like, just never drove the extra
drive. Yeah, up until then, I feel like level one, like, specialized in all these little pockets in Colorado or Montana.
Utah.
And then as soon as we went up there, we're like,
Floodgates were open.
We were doing this wrong. Like, this is, like, not doing it wrong, but, like, God, there's so much up there that.
Yeah, there's so much up there until you, like, show up at the same exact jump in, like, a pretty random, like, a smaller zone with, like, a snowboard crew of equal size trying to hit the same thing you are, which sounds like a line from Real Time. But...
Early rise and a quick start.
Yeah.
Well, but it sounds like it worked out a lot better in Real Time as that went.
Yeah, it did. That was an amicable experience, I think, where they ended up sharing the jump. But this one...
The difference in Whistler is, like... In Utah, it's like
hardcore.
Always fairly good. Where Whistler, people are sitting around for a week and you're spending a lot of money. Your segment's on the line, so like
feast or famine.
So you see everyone in the trail had it like way too early, and everyone's just like trying to get after the same thing you are.
Well, the really sunny days are few and far between.
Oh, yeah.
So we had been out. We had been there like a little bit, but we went out and. Built this, we saw maybe the like carcass of a jump, which is not a rare thing anywhere, any backcountry zone that is frequented by skiers or snowboarders.
Carcass,
so
for those that are not familiar with it, real quick, is
it's a dead animal.
Yeah. Like a dead deer, like an elk or something, yeah, will die like on the knoll and where there's a natural landing, and you put a pile of snow.
And that's how you know where to build the jump.
Yeah. Exactly.
But yeah, there was this, you know, like suggestion of a jump had been. So we decided, we basically spent half a day putting up a cheese wedge on top of where this thing had been, like over a pretty nice step up roller. I'm suggesting with my hands how it's shaped, but yeah, no one can hear my hand movements.
I can hear your hand movements, Friedel.
And then waited like probably 3 or 4 days for another snowstorm to pass through. And the day we went out, dude, I don't know if you remember that morning, but it was like 2.5 feet of blower.
Stupid deep.
Stupid deep light powder, like even light.
You
light
couldn't
for
even
BC standards.
This yeah jump was off the like the trail up. Like we weren't even actually like going up much vertical. It was like the flat trail. We knew no way we were going to get anywhere. It was just like,
yeah,
on the side.
This is
of
like
the
in the trees, like not a. We're not going deep this day. And it was perfect because we had built this jump, so we didn't need to go deep on this crazy deep bluebird powday. Probably one of the nicest days you can ask for in the backcountry in BC. And, dude, we got an early rise and a quick start. Got to the trailhead, got all the way out, like on, I think it's like 17 kilometers up this logging road. Get out there, and then you can see the jump, and then Curtis Cizek, is that how you pronounce his name?
It's close enough. Cizek?
Cizek?
Yeah.
Like, those guys, the snowboarder crew, I think it was Brian Fox, Austin Smith, and Curtis.
It's Volcom.
Another filmer.
Right?
It was Volcom.
At the
it was
time,
some,
yeah.
Yeah, it may have been a Volcom crew. It used to be, like, People kind of was
yeah,
the snowboard crew for
people
a while, mm, but... yeah, those guys
became the drink water crew, if you
yes
know them by that name.
That
yeah
is exactly what it was.
After they drank a lot of water.
Yeah.
To get that moniker.
Dude, I just remember he's kind of a sled neck, and he had a four stroke turbo. And I was like doing high marks trying to get up to the jump, and it was literally like 100 yards away. And his fucking turbo.
Very goes, obvious we were pecking away at it.
Like just crossing pads on slope with him. And I was like, you motherfucker, dude. Like, like you do not get to this jump just because you have a turbo. Like we're clearly here, we're in the zone, and so we all get up there a couple minutes later, and they were like, "This is our fucking jump." Like you guys, like what are you doing out here? And I was like, "Well, we've been out here for years. Like, what are you doing out here?" And they're like, "Well, we hit this jump like a couple weeks ago, yeah,
yeah,
and we really want to hit it again." Because it didn't work out the first session. It's like, dude,
good for you.
That sucks. But, like, we actually, and I'm no fucking lie, like, built this jump that we were both looking at, like, 3 days ago. And they were bitches about it, but let us hit it. Like, they're like, fine, whatever. Like, but there was some strong skier versus
vibes,
snowboarder vibes going on, which I don't fucking have any patience for. But... they were definitely just like, you fucking kooks. And we were like, you fucking cool boarders. Like,
yeah.
Like, fuck off. Like, we were here. Like, you should have gotten up earlier.
Mm.
But either way, we built that jump. Like, we were
yo,
not poaching.
I cannot imagine,
shit.
Like, yeah, what it would have been like if you showed up and they were getting ready to session that thing.
It would have sucked. But, I mean, anyway.
It was
like,
slim pickings. So, like,
dude,
there was really nobody.
It
was
slim pickings
because
in the particular zone we were, you had to make some pretty massive moves to get into the Alpine. Mm. And that was not happening this day. And not in a safe way anyway. But so they moved like 200 yards to our left and built another little jump and we're sessioning it. So they were just like up in our shit. And they were like, by the way, like, just FYI, like, you need a lot of speed for this thing because it doesn't really work. And that's why it didn't work for us. And we're like, I think we got it. You know, this is Parker White, Chris Logan, Wiley. Like, these
and
guys
skiers,
know.
Skiers, not snowboarders.
Dude,
and that makes a huge
so
difference for speed.
They're, yeah, like, watching us from their jump 100 feet away. And Chris Logan drops in. They're like, that's not enough speed. He does a backflip, like sort of iron cross, and like barely pulls his tails up through, like barely crosses over the knuckle and barely, like, even doesn't scorpion, basically. Mm. And they were just like, salt on the wounds, dude, salt on the wound. Like, because they just thought we were, like, a gaper ski crew. And I was like, which is possibly, it was so, I was just cringing. Because I was like, that's probably, like, the most hype, like, cliche, like, gaper skier trick. Like, and they just watched us, like, yeah, not crush it, like, first
hit. And then Parker went and did a double Daffy.
Well, dude, and then little did they, like, and that was, like, God, the stuff CeeLo was sitting on that year, like.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
He ended up doing a dub backflip on this thing. He just had a hike way higher up. And I think Parker was trying, like, 180s on it, too, which is pretty dope. But, yeah, oh, God, it's like just one of those weird backcountry experiences where you very little human contact, if any, and then that particular day.
And then a ton of it.
Thing.
Yeah.
But, oh, that
bad
just stuck. Yeah, it was weird. It was like, oh, dude. I still have just, like, weird vibes about those guys, even though I'm sure they're nice guys. And, like, we all do the same shit, but it was like there was, yeah.
It didn't work out that day.
No, it didn't, but, you know. They were actually cool for letting us hit it. I'll give them that. I'll give them that for sure. But yeah, dark. Oh my God. You crush it. Yeah.
That that same zone, back to, like, it was a little higher up, but Parker did a five that's in a segment, and that's probably one of my more favorite fives in the backcountry. It was so good. Like,
yep. Same jump that Chris does that huge right nine on too. Mm. Insane.
Yeah. And it's crazy watching Parker's segment. He's got insane tricks in the backcountry, insane pillows, but something that I don't know, you're not going to see much more of anymore from Parker, but he had crazy good style in the streets. Like, and he had, like, a full street segment too, which was that, I think the following year he did a little bit, and then that was kind of the end. I'd say this is towards the end.
That was the end with Level One, because the next year we filmed for Real Ski. And then I think he did a little with Chris for the first year of Big Pick, but yeah.
I really wish that he, I want to see more, but I think those days
are
done.
Once you go to POW, man, he was, to add a little bit to that, he was so hungry and so committed to having this well-rounded part, because that was a big deal at that point in time, to the point where...
Well, still is.
Well, for sure. But for people trying to, like, take that next step and, like, leave their mark, so to speak, like, that meant something to him. And some people, it doesn't mean something to him. But certainly for Parker at the time, that was a thing.
I'd say he left his best mark in the fact that the year before he opened the movie, this year he closed the movie, and it's like...
And then he took 4 years off and came back and closed the fucking movie again.
I'd say he left one hell of a mark. 5 years.
Absolutely.
Even longer. Excuse me. But yeah.
But just to talk a little bit about the street stuff that he was doing that year. So for one, that, like, crazy awning, it's like a gap off of a parking garage, the roof of a parking garage, like, it's like 50-50 to like 180 out. So that was here in Denver. And that was something that I had shopped around to him. And he drove or flew to Denver the day before we left for that 3 week trip to Europe. And he pretty much just, like, showed up, like, mid afternoon just to, like, you know, extended layover status. It's like, oh, there's 6 inches of snow on the ground. What about that crazy awning gap? Let's go hit it. So that's what we did during his extended layover, was go lace that thing up, which was really big, really sketchy.
It's sketchy.
And probably the last thing you want to get into as an athlete within, like, 12 hours of your departure for a 3 week POW trip in Europe.
Yeah.
But that's how, like, on point and hungry that dude was. And I that just, like, you know, tells the tale of his season right there. And then we went to Anchorage, Alaska in March. And as I was mentioning earlier, like, shot so much stuff in. We had 3 Anchorage trips that year. So I think you went early or around the holidays, was it probably, Kyle?
I just know it was dark, and the one thing constant on all those trips was Logan Emlock.
Absolutely.
I don't think any of those trips would have come together without him. And
oh, of course not.
No.
He
had
the
spots, and there's another hungry hockey player up there.
There's a reason no one else was going to film Urban in Anchorage at that time. Fucking A.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like certainly off the beaten path, and
yeah,
if you don't have the connections, and you know, I mentioned this prior, but you know, he was one of the super unknown athletes who just gave so much back to us as a crew over the years, and certainly not the least of which was hosting us for many, many, many extended stays over the years in Anchorage, and just would roll out the red carpet and had like all the pieces of the puzzle in place. He always had a place to stay. He had the beta on all the spots. He had a winch, which he built. What was that thing's name?
He was the personal mechanic for the crew.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Anything went wrong, he's just like the biggest.
Jenny? Was that his winch? Something like that.
Gina.
Oh, man. And but
now that feature that you shot with Wallace and I think Hornbeck, got a 5 out of Wallace, got a rodeo 5 at that school. I don't know if you've heard this story since, but I heard a couple years after that principal has got that photo from Wall or that somewhere in Alaska. There's a principal with an office with a framed photo of Wallace hitting a feature at the school in his office. Like he fully embraced it.
That's awesome. Shit. So a little bit of the backstory there. So I did two separate trips to Anchorage, Alaska during the month of March. And the first one was with Wallace and Hornbeck and Logan Imlock. And we went for like 7 to 10 days. And it was, I think I mentioned this earlier, as far as like the trips that I've probably hustled more on that trip than any other thing I've ever done in my life. Like Wallace just came swinging for the fences and Hornbeck was like holding on for dear life, trying to keep up with this like, oh, you don't need to sleep. We're just going to drink energy drinks and like go to the hotel, maybe to charge batteries if you're lucky. And I don't mean sleep. I mean, like let Josh actually charge his camera batteries. I mean, it was just like an absolute next level where we're sleeping in the car for like an hour or two at spots, waiting for security to leave, waiting for the sun to come up or go down. And like, there might've been a couple days where we didn't even make it back to the hotel. It was like that level of just like mental
on
insanity.
Psycho.
On our leg, and God, I almost wish it did, but because it kept us going. I think Wallace had talked to Dave Schmidt, who was the Monster team manager at the time, and we found like the local distribution center, and we had like basically like cases on cases of Monster just with us at all times. I'm like,
in an IV bag, and
it's like, and you get some motivation in that guy, and it's like, oh my God, it's
game over.
Slow down. Like, I don't know if anyone has the energy to keep up with how, you know.
Like few others, man. Yeah. But the school that you're specifically referring to is in Wasilla, Alaska, outside of Anchorage, home of Sarah Palin.
In Portugal, the man. I'd rather talk about that.
You can see Russia from there.
Well, the Lords of Portland now. They can't hang there.
And
great view of Russia.
Great view of Russia from my house. And so this school, like I think Seo and I drove around. Maybe it was Seo and Wallace and I. Or maybe just Wallace and I. But anyway, I spent like a day or two scoping before the rest of the crew went up there. It might have been with Wally. And we kind of sussed out this like, you know, stair up gap that you were talking about before. Mm. I think we went back twice. But when we actually got it, we drove into the parking lot and we either had a hot tip or we figured out from being there multiple times that security left at like 2 a.m. and we just like waited down the road to watch and wait for security to drive away and leave.
Some heist shit.
And then we had to start building. And there was a ton of snow that needed to be moved because you had to fill in this entire flight of stairs. McChesney was there too, actually.
So he's the one who fucks that feature up, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, there's like gap to wall ride.
Yeah,
like,
as well as nose tap and just gap over the whole thing. Yep. It's like three different ways he hits that.
Sure.
It's wild.
And then Hornbeck, I think, did a 5 nose tap on the railing. And then Wally was just doing these massive like Rodeo 5 gap in the whole thing, which became a North Face ad and a poster. Say it was just crushing the photos. It was actually just like a beautiful setup. And anyway, so I think when the movie came out, there was like a thread on New Schoolers about like, that's my school. And then all these kids were freaking out about it. And like, oh, the principal of this. And I remember hearing something about that, Decker. So I think you're definitely spot on.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
A couple different ways that could have gone. And
that's a pretty dope photo.
Oh, it's a great photo. Seiya was out on that and just like
the man knows
crushing
how to take
flash
a
game.
Good flash.
I mean, we've been going for a while here, but I think we would be remiss if we did not discuss the Breck Park shoot with the crazy gap to pipe to gap out like feature.
Sure. Yeah. They called that the elevated pipe, and the irony there is that Brian Callahan at Sun Valley had actually proposed a similar feature that year that didn't get made for lack of snow, actually. And it was this weird coincidence that Breck came to us offering to build a very similar concept where you basically have, let's call it a very short half pipe that I don't think it really has much of a pitch to it. It's kind of flat, if you will, and it's kind of like elevated above grade and has a fall away, like fall line landing off the back, kind of like a reverse hip style. And then there were a couple takeoffs on the front, so you could, with a little bit of creativity, hit it a number of ways. And LSM, Lucas Stahl Madison, hot off his Super Unknown win, showed up and showed us all the different ways that you could hit it.
Yeah, I think it's really rare for people to get that wild with shit in the park and be like, oh, whoa, we're going to do this wild, new, crazy setup feature, and for people to tee off on it like they did.
Sure.
Like, yeah, and in particular, Lucas, and I believe it's Nicholas, who did, they do the, like, gap over with a hand plant going on.
Is that Sig?
Sig does a hand plant, but Nicholas does do a Rodeo 5 thing where he basically, like, clears it by an inch.
Yeah. My name is Nicholas Erickson, and I'm from...
Oh, man, what you don't see there, I think there's, like, half a shot of it that exists that's probably never seen the light of day in public. Decker, you probably recall this. Nicholas tried to hit the left takeoff and transfer, like, redirect style into the middle of the pipe. So, effectively, he's, like, going cross hill, maybe like 60, 70 feet, and then just smacks into a wall. And he didn't tell anybody about it. He just kind of like went for it. And I think I was standing shooting the landing off the knuckle. Mm. And like out of the corner of my eye, I saw him like take off and like turn real quick and got like just the splat. But holy shit, Decker, if you remember that or anybody else does, that was like horrifying to witness. He got up and all. It was good, but it was just like so. It was an amazingly cool idea, but probably physically not possible.
No, or unless you got really lucky. And people teed off on that though.
And Dory,
absolutely.
Dory, one of the few times you've shot with Torin as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that was on like the front end of Torin doing a few trips with Level One, a couple that year in particular between
park shoots. Yeah.
Sure, between Turkey and Sun Valley and Breck. Yeah. But Pat Goodenough, who's a Breck local, who had been killing it kind of on the down low for a long time. Actually,
local legend. Dude, like
straight,
just straight
up
legend.
Local legend. And he actually, I think, worked with Poor Boys at some point. But anyway, so being a Breck local, he showed up at this shoot and dropped some hammers. Like, definitely made a huge impact on everybody that was there.
I remember, like, just the level, good style. He's always been, like, homies, and we all, like, knew him. But the level of appreciation, I still remember leaving that shoot. He was so appreciative of, like, getting us involved. I think we ran into him having dinner with his mom that night that was in town. But there was just, like, the best, like, just the best vibes after, in terms of, like, I don't know. He was just super, super appreciative of being part. And then there's Sun Valley, which I feel like we can't without talking about.
That's a good one for a number of reasons. Obviously, it was another very successful shoot. That was our second year in what was a four-year partnership with them. Skipping After Dark. So this was our third year. And Brian Callahan, who, you know, I know we've casually mentioned him before, but I really can't say enough about how much that guy put into that partnership and making things happen. There are yes people and there are no people in the world. And he was one of the biggest yes people I've ever worked with. He's like, how crazy an idea can you come at me with so I can actually make it happen. And like, word. Rarely have I encountered such an amazing like feedback loop. It's like, oh yeah, like, well, can you fucking do this? Can you build me? Can you build me a custom like 70-foot plexiglass whale tail box and then put it up on logs 20 feet off the ground? Can you do that? And he's like, yeah, I can do that.
So I feel like for we level one had, you know, is our second or third year shooting there. And, you know, at that point, like the town's caught wind, which is such a cool small town. And people caught wind. There's a level one shoot. And I don't know if it's Friedel, but at one point we said instead of before it was all about keeping park shoots clean and you might clean background. But this
keep
one,
on
we're
the
like,
down low.
Let's tell the whole damn town to come up, and probably ended up being
sick.
One of the better segments. But my favorite shot, hand down from that segment, is Friedel got a shot of like
the
that dog that's like not paying attention, to kind of ears perk up and watches somebody hit the jump in the background. But that was kind of cool, just to like and. Just mix it up a little bit.
Oh, we invited the whole town. It was either like embrace it or fight it. And we had to make a very conscious decision about what to do. And it's like, well, we're not going to fight it. Like, these people
good
are all just
call.
So hyped.
Well,
this vibe is like.
Ski Films had
people are going to come either way. And also, like, these exclusive park shoots are just so sterile. There's only so much excitement you're going to get out of that. And, you know, they're almost devoid of any sort of, like, normal human interaction.
Don't have anyone in the shot or...
Yeah.
So we
which
said
is just not very
in.
Natural. So, I mean, once those people... It's like an if you build it, they will come situation. They all just, like, showed up after work or whatever. And people were, like, literally just walking up the hill with kids on their shoulders and dogs and six-packs and all that. But I was... We had enough angles going on there that were covering, you know, Josh and the heli and whatnot. But I was like, I'm going to shoot every single shot this shoot with something in the foreground outside of like what would
like
not.
People and dogs. And
how many takes did you do to get that shot with the dogs so fucking nice? Because it looks faked, like how nice the dog turns around right at the moment.
I
hits the jump.
Probably sat there for 20 minutes or something, but I think it was just fortunate with, you know, Parker going or whoever is in that shot, because there was probably plenty of other takes where there nothing really happened. And then, like, I think the only thing I prompted when the kids cheer, I was like, hey, you want to add a little sauce to this shot? I'm like, you're in my shot and I want you to be. Can you just like hype it up a little bit when someone goes? And the one kid is like, yeah, and you can tell in the shot that he's like putting it on a little bit. But I mean, in general, it felt really good to like include these people that are like from Sun Valley, from Ketchum, and just not have it be this like very, I don't know, sterilized park shoot where, you know, there's no interaction with anybody.
It's well, just it's like such a controlled
people,
environment. Like,
controlled environment, yeah. People just doing tricks. So, those are
it worked out great.
Yeah.
That was, again, another one of these, like, super hectic, crazy logistical nightmare situations where the weather was in and out and doing its thing. And for sure, we had to get both of those features shot in one day. And if you guys remember, like, that was the plan. We shot that feature at the top of Baldy, the jib feature, at like 5 p.m. or something like that. From like 5 to 6, we had an hour-long window. And then everybody skied down and rallied right over to the jump. And I went to the LZ and hung out there. And then we shot on Dollar from like 7 to 9 or whatever it was. But it was just like unbelievably hectic.
Those shoots were always like, I feel like that out of all the park shoots I've done, Sun Valley were always the best because A, the features were always perfect, but like they put us up proper. Like they put us in really nice condos. We had like the hot tub. So there was like a huge crew, you know, camaraderie and dynamics. So everyone's like hanging out in the hot tub and you don't know, like all of a sudden it's like, oh, I just got a text from Berman. Like, let's go hit the jump. Like, You know, yeah. But it's like, I feel like
Siri called it being a firefighter.
And at one point there was, and maybe it was that year, I could get it wrong, but the town was super welcoming to us. And we went to some locals' house who, the house was getting demolished, and it was a demolition party. And we walked in the door and they handed us a sledgehammer and they're like, take a hit at the wall. And we were like, you know, smashing the walls with sledgehammers. And it, like, obviously you can imagine where that led. But
that went south.
A gun got pulled.
Dude. But crazy, like, yeah. But just like that town's unique. The resort was unique. And I feel like you're never going to have park shoots like that anymore. Certainly with certain corporations running most of the big resorts. So that was a special time.
Absolutely. I just want to circle back real quick and give one more shout out to Brian Callahan, because that particular jib feature, the whale tail box, that came from a mountain bike event in Winter Park. They called it the Fruit Bowl. And I was like, man, I want to see something like this on skis for skiing.
Dude, it's like, looks like, that was my first thought when I saw it, was like, this shit looks like a mountain bike feature.
Yep. That's,
with the wood structure.
Absolutely. I mean, that's where the inspiration came from. And it's like, well, you know, would we build it as a platform and you put snow on it and turn it into a butter box? Would you actually put, you know, plexiglass on it and turn it into a, like jib feature or box slide? And I shopped a couple of variations around of that feature for years, and every single resort that I was working with said, no fucking way. It's too expensive. It's too complicated. It's just not going to work in general. Like, it's a mountain bike feature. Don't do that. And, Brian Callahan was just like so hyped to take this on, like no hesitation whatsoever. And in fact, he waited until we got to town. It was like the first night I was there to put the finishing touches on this thing in the shop so he could like dial in all the angles. He's like, does this look good? And it's like the entire length of the shop that they're working in, and just like, you know, an absolute perfectionist. And, you know, there are few times, if any, where I've worked with anybody, and certainly a resort, that was so responsive. And I think that definitely shows just like the level of creativity that they allowed us to come to the table with was just awesome.
It ended up in their park.
Yeah.
In their park on Dollar.
Yep.
I think that was a caveat for, you know, spending the money on it. But I just remember the next season, like, kids are like, yeah, that thing was in our park, but it's buried. Like, it's just only the plexiglass, pretty much. Like,
sure,
so you just sort of slide into it and then back onto snow. And it's like, well, yeah, what did you expect? Like, it's not going to be on 20-foot posts.
Like, oh, man.
You're not going to be doing coffin slides, right, like Sig Bite on it.
They like, put a big level 20 one logo feet off the ground. On it.
Dope.
Yeah, that's right. Put it in the park.
Yeah.
So on to the closing segment, Friedel, I feel like you spent a ton of time with Parker that year. I haven't heard as much from you. Like, anything you want to add on P. White or just general?
I mean, yeah, it was a great year. I think we did some stuff that I look back and I'm like, damn, that's probably some of the, you know, the sickest pill lines.
There's some huge stacks in there.
We're going to ever see stuff like that, but I think it kind of just speaks for itself. I don't know if I can really add to it, you know?
It's like, Parker put down a sick ender.
That's one of my personal favorite parts of all time. And it speaks for itself. Just go watch it.
Do you want to clarify the front flip dub nose that I was a little... When the giganto front flip dub nose that Parker does in the backcountry, I was like, what is that, a make? It looks like he could have backslapped out of it and then pulled out. And you told me that.
Yeah, he doesn't land that front flip, for the record. That's like a huge just backsplat. But I don't think we ever intended it to be a landing, I guess.
Put it in there because it's nuts.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was just one of these end of the backcountry season, late April days in Whistler, where we went out and got like a very long evening and found these natural tee-offs. Parker just started teeing off on this cliff, which if you find a natural cliff, you can trick off, especially in that day and age. It was fucking sick.
It is.
He does that seven, which I think at the time was like he was just like, that's the craziest, that's the illest thing I've ever done. Mm-hmm. And then I went for that front flip dub nose, which he ends up, dude, he hates front flips. He's professed since day one how much he hates them. And he ends up one-upping his front flips no matter where he goes, somewhere, somehow. It's pretty hilarious. But that was definitely one of those ones. That shot that's in the movie was just a lock-off I had on a tripod. Well, I was filming, I guess both shots are in it. I was filming from both sides, one handheld, one tripod. But it was, yeah, buck wild.
Yeah.
That's some P. White special right there.
Mm.
That's one more thing that I'd point out real quick is that watching this movie in particular, so many double angles from these one-person crews. Like everywhere I went and almost everywhere Friedel went and certainly almost everywhere Decker went, I'm seeing these lock-offs and some have like fake camera moves like baked into them
right.
in post. But holy shit, like we got a lot of mileage from a small team.
Yeah, I even like duct taped a tripod to a log and like cantilevered it out over this pillow line. I was trying to get like this top down pillow line.
Not gaff tape, duct tape.
Duct tape holds better, baby.
Can't afford that gaff.
Word.
$30 a roll.
Decker, you got still a little bit of time here because I got more shit I want to ask you about.
Yeah, I'm chilling. It's 9:14 p.m.
Word.
Baby's asleep.
I want to talk a little bit about the reception to this movie and also just like the production process after it was done filming with. Decker, how was it having a very young Stefan Tchaikovsky hanging around the office all summer watching over your shoulder while you edit?
That was Stefan's first year, right?
Yep.
Yes.
That's why I bring it up.
He was a young buck and came in like just super motivated. And I think Berman at one point, I don't know why I remember this, but I feel like he was like, that guy is like going, that guy's going to be like a senator. Like that guy's going somewhere. Well, you're like, that guy's going to like, we're going to have him for now, but he's just going to like, he's going to go to like some crazy school. And
to back up a little bit though, like he came for an interview when he was 15 years old. And his mom parked across the street. We were still based at the Downing House. And he like walked up to the house and he sat down with you and I for like half an hour and just like talked the biggest game about like, well, what do you want to do when you grow up? Well, one day I'm going to own the biggest production company in all of extreme sports. And I'm going to put you guys out of business. And
yeah, telling you how to run it. And you're like, damn, this young buck is...
I was impressed. I mean, it was definitely like a little bit of naivete, a little bit of balls, and it's certainly just some enthusiasm, but I was like, I like this kid. I don't think you had the same vibe at first, but, but yeah, the next summer was, he was 16, and he was our full-time intern. We were over at 3333 in our first real office, and...
That summer.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good summer for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, we finally had some space to spread our wings and not keep our camera packs in the bathtub and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Decker, this is your last movie with Level One before moving outside the mama bird to spread your own wings. What is there anything there you want to fill us in on? Why'd you make that move? What went on with this movie that prompted that move?
Before you say that, I mean, this is by far, I mean, still to date, my favorite probably movie I've ever worked on. And I think Level One's strongest movie, if you debate Refresh or this. But between Skiing, Friendship, Flow, Music, it just was working. And that summer, I kind of always knew that Wallace was going to wander off and do his own thing. And it just kind of came. Then I ended up like wanted to try something differently. So branched off and did that. But that was certainly, like I said, the best day to date. But and honestly, looking back after watching the movie today, kind of glad I did it because I would have probably beat myself up so hard trying to recreate something that was so special. And it was like, yeah, the best my favorite ski movie I've probably ever made. So it was time to try something different, but yeah, no hard feelings.
We literally did try to recreate it. We made a movie called Partly Cloudy.
And it was named Partly Cloudy because it wasn't quite sunny.
Yeah, It wasn't sunny. But
I think you were at the place in your career where you just needed to step away and do your own thing, be your own boss, make your own decisions. And I think that you were ready for that and you benefited from it in every way. It was the best move you could have made.
It wasn't hard feelings on level one. It was just like, honestly, I saw
Nyjah
Houston release a solo project and I was like, damn, it was just like a lot of energy of let's try something different. And yeah. Walsh and I worked well together and it was like, the following year, I think I went on a couple trips and technically shot for level one the following year. I think I went.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you
Finland
had
for the fourth time and then,
got some like rare
shots. And so, you know, I still wanted to contribute, but it was like Wallace was just so focused on just making like a one-off piece. But obviously you can't do that by yourself. So we brought along a bunch of homies and he was like, those guys' shots can go wherever they want. And they wanted to put them in level one movies. And so it still worked out.
I do remember, though, I had taken Luca, the husky, to the vet, and he'd either already been diagnosed with cancer or just got, like, some seriously bad news. And I remember being in the parking lot, my phone rings, and you're calling Deck, and you're like, hey, well, I just want to let you know, I think I'm going to do something else next year. I'm just like, oh, my God.
That's the hardest phone call. Me.
That's the hardest phone call of my life. Like, I mean, level one's family, and I mean, I broke it to Friedel and Shuey first, and just almost like to talk to somebody like,
sure.
How do I talk to Josh about this? Because I wanted it to
Till his dog is dying and then I'll let him know.
No, I think the Luca thing was later, but it was just like, you know, you guys are the closest thing to family that isn't family. So
absolutely, man.
So it's like, it was hard to do, but I just wanted to do it for my own, like,
oh man.
Oh, of course. No explanation required whatsoever. I mean,
well, like, explanation required for the listeners, but none for you.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
To clarify.
Kyle, you were I think the biggest loss for us in like so many ways, as we were discussed, just like as a editor and director and filmer, but also just as a homie, like on a day-to-day basis, it was like a bigger loss. Like, I think for level one than any, like, you know, losing any athlete, which we certainly would over the years. But you split to do the Wallace Project, which was a new thing outside. It was making a different kind of ski movie. And I think that was one of my final thoughts about the year of 2012 in general, is when there was definitely, like, the winds of change, if you will, in the air, for sure, because that was the year Instagram started to hit a little harder.
First level one Instagram post was from the trip in
Champery.
Yep.
That's when I got my first post, Justin Dory at the Breck shoots. Like, you got to try this. I was like, dude, it's just not going to be another Facebook, but clearly things change. That's a good, good way to put it. Like a lot of change and nobody knew where the landscape was going. And I still don't know where the hell it's going, but
you guys were trying something new with the one-off segment with Wallace. And I think that was probably pretty goddamn exciting to work on, because it wasn't like, it was a little more focused and a little more web friendly or whatever.
Yeah. It was exciting. Certainly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Powder Magazine thought it was pretty fucking exciting because they gave it Movie of the Year for the first time ever. Did that result...
12 years.
Yeah.
Take a minute.
Did that result in, like, increased legitimacy, increased funding for the next year, Berman?
Oh, it's funny, man. Whenever we win a bunch of awards, I come back to the office all excited. I'm just like, oh, this is fucking great. It's going to make my job so much easier to raise sponsorship support. And, like, Shuey at this point just kind of, like, chuckles. He's like, I mean, I've learned the lesson so many times over. It translates to absolutely nothing. It lasts for, like, it's very validating and more valuable to us than it is to anybody else. And it doesn't seem to translate, at least I never, you know, maybe other people have had different experiences. That's certainly altogether possible.
I'd like to hear Friedel's thoughts on this, because him and I, we've gone to so many of these awards, and at the end of the day, I feel like I would get so caught up in these, but Friedel was always like my voice of reason, where he's like, we're not making ski movies for awards, and you got to consider a lot of factors that go into awards, from judging to other movies to whatever, and it's just all about giving your best, yeah. And I feel like there's not anything we could have done differently to that year. We gave it our best. And
oh, for sure. And we always are. And I'll tell you what, like, I think we won that year is because we made a movie that everybody in the ski community was looking for. We were making, that was really something that was all about going out and having fun skiing and just like positive, warm vibes. And we lost Sarah Burke that year. There are a few other accidents. CR had passed away the year before. And I mean, the community as a whole, I felt at the time was suffering some serious losses. And I mean, they were just, it was cold. And to offer something up that was just this, warm, fuzzy, approachable portrayal of the community that we had around us, I think was what people really, whether or not they wanted to see it, they certainly embraced it.
I guess looking back, the landscape too, leading up to it was, Kurt Morgan came out with, his series of movies, and everyone was going the epic route in skiing. Obviously everyone was chasing that. And I think that was the year that, our angle was to breathe some life into skiing, or just like, not even like that we were doing it, but just like showcase what the hell's going on. Like, don't get too epic, because the skiers that are in these movies and the things that are going on had such a good vibe. Like, just turn your camera on at the right time and do it. And everyone else was so focused on Cineflex and Reds and like all this, like, it was like everyone was chasing up the wrong stream, and we're like, wait, this is our moment to like breathe. Like, we have the crew. Like, naturally there was not any other crew in skiing that was so organic. Everyone was like, at that point, Red Bull was paying these athletes to go with these movies, or, it was just like such an obvious, like, eclectic like group of good homies, and it just worked. We just pointed cameras, and the rest is we just edited the right things in. I don't know.
To add to what you're saying though, another thing that I'll point out is that I do remember either you, Friedel, or you, Kyle, had a conversation with Philip at Field Productions prior to when we started filming this movie. And it was all about how they were capturing so many of these really seemingly organic behind the scenes like moments, real moments. And Fila's response was like, we just shoot everything. Like, we literally shoot everything. And I remember really picking up on that. It's like, oh, well, I mean, that's what we're gonna do this year. And I mean, I personally remember that I shot everything. Like, I always had a 5D with a strap around my neck 24/7. And unless I was dragging camera bags through the train stations, like, that thing was rolling.
Well, it did used to be about like producing these like 3-second clips for a 60-minute movie. And this is pre-Instagram, where we kind of like, now Instagram brings that life out, but you kind of got to reeled in closer to the feel or vibe of what was going on a trip. It's not just like, here's my 6 shots. It's like, Chris Logan's hilarious. Logan Emlock, look at that guy. Like, it just brought these characters out.
Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, your shots of Parker that, like, start the credits are, hands down, always the funniest shots in the movie. Anyone I watch the movie with always laughs at those shots of him being like, yeah, just a moment, just a moment. Like, that's kind of a, like, perfect example of what we're talking about.
Yeah. But
not rocket science. It's just, like, I don't know.
But
we had the crew.
No, dude, that's the motto. It's just shoot fucking everything.
Because you couldn't do that. Like, that shoot everything wouldn't work if we didn't have, like, the right. It's all about the, not only the riders we were shooting with, but, like, they were all just, like, we were best friends with them. They were best. Like, it was just, like, when there's that whole big circle of friendship, like, you can't fake that. And It was pretty sick, and I'm hoping to see more and more. You know, hopefully that continues with whether it's the smallest kid, you know, a kid in Nebraska making a ski film or the biggest like ski film. It's really fun to see, and that always shines.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think everybody embraced this movie in particular because of all those reasons. And actually, I was trying to remember before exactly like what the dates were, but my son was born on the day that we did our iTunes release. And I remember leaving the hospital and I kept checking the stats on the iTunes app and I watched us go to number one in sports and it was just like, yes. But
Berman's like, sports.
Sports. Well, I mean, that was a thing at the time. They actually put, you know, us in the I guess, still in the sports category of films. Well, I think the year before we were classified as TV, which was a really odd thing.
Mm. Well, that's how all the quote unquote action sports
were. But yeah. We just like made a shift from TV to film, and we're cataloged or categorized under actions or sports in general.
Sports
but,
movies.
Yeah, but there was like The Blind Side and like a couple other movies that are always sitting like one and two like perennially. And
Moneyball.
Yeah,
dude, Moneyball is like must get rented on a reg on the reg.
No doubt.
Because that is always holding down a slot every year for the past since it came out. It's like, oh, Moneyball. Yeah. What's up, buddy?
we're going to beat you for this like day or two.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was always fun to see tomorrow. Like, yeah, see like these titles against like other movies. And I mean, I don't know what year it was, but now we're not even really talking about DVD releases much more. Like, when do you guys think it was when DVDs? I mean, Berman could tell you because he was probably looking at you probably knew the back end, but like at some point, all we were doing was shipping out DVDs, and then all of a sudden, somewhere iTrip, Refresh, After Dark, there started to be a transition. When did like iTunes sales?
It always felt like to me that 2009 was peak DVD for us, but I could be totally wrong about that.
Say so. I think that the shift began,
which would be iTrip, right?
Refresh.
Oh,
okay. 2009, 2010, and then certainly digital started to take a big bite out of that. It was interesting because I remember our distributor at the time for Refresh, like it was a process to get on iTunes, and we had to push.
You had to know
it.
Steve.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you had to be in with Steve, and we were not. And I remember just like pushing and pushing, like, you guys, you're fucking blowing it. Like, this movie, it's really good. People love it. Like, this needs to be up there. I was like, yeah. And it, like, to think today, if during that whole fiasco, if there had been like a one click away option for people to have bought that movie, I mean, again, not that we needed to like necessarily profit off that directly, but you know, I think that it certainly would have like made waves on iTunes.
Would have helped it with your legal fees.
Yeah, would have offset the legal fees for sure. But regardless, I think that was probably around the tipping point. Probably we're looking at, I would say,
Sunny is like when iTunes is
starting
really
to take off. Yeah.
And then like alternate, I feel like from, like there's just so many experiments of like maybe even I mean Hammock and Phil branched off and started like, but there was so many different experiments of like
alternatives
to the DVD, and in hindsight, like
short form,
it kind of, I'm curious on your guys' thoughts, but it kind of started to be the demise of the ski films. You saw less and less movies coming out, and like, I mean, the three of us are the biggest fans, advocates, everything for the ski film, and I don't ever want to see them start to die, but you start to see...
Oh, they've started.
These kids just want to see, like, they want to see a shot, and they want to see it now. I feel like, I wonder if you went out and, you know, just release like stuff on Instagram, like, it's just like, you know, we all lived in a world that the ski movie premiere and everything is everything, and it was life, and it was so much energy, and now I hope that the new generation still sees that. Or,
dude, I want to correct you there, Decker. I don't think that the kids want to see the clips now. I think that the brands want to see the clips now. Sure. And that more than anything is what's driving the Instagram movement, is that like every brand needs and has to have a presence on social media to keep up with everybody else. But everyone I know who watches ski movies wants to see the long form stuff just as much as we're talking about right here. I think that passion and that hunger for a full part
is still
there. The
excitement of waiting for, I feel like waiting until the fall, kids are so used to getting everything now. Maybe it's because of the brands that, like, I don't know.
Surely. I can't compare it to those days because I wasn't there then. But, yeah. Like, I do think that that is where it's coming from there.
Totally.
Yeah. Word up.
Times are changing. Yeah. That was definitely when the tide was turning in particular.
I mean, we're talking about iTunes, and that shit's basically shutting down, too.
But looking into your guys' movie this year, like, romance, I think there's...
You keep talking as if we made a movie.
Well, all you guys have been doing is podcasts, but I'm assuming you guys are going to... I mean, today's Labor Day, and every year I've ever worked at Level One, you're working like 14-hour days because you realize September premiere is coming up soon. But
yeah.
You guys, I mean, tip of the hat to you guys for like doing what you guys are doing. Like, and I think a lot of people are super excited. This year's film means so much to so many people, especially the athletes from past, present, and whatever. But just because there's less and less people doing it, and you guys continue to do it and bring that energy and the September excitement, and yeah, I look forward to coming out to the premiere, and I hope anyone that's listening is, if you guys aren't sold out, to come out and
see what the hype's all about.
Because it's pretty damn cool and special for what you guys have created, and yeah.
There's no ski event that you'll go to that's going to have more excitement and more energy ever.
Or more Kyle Decker.
No. But I feel like there's going to be so many, I've only talked to a few, but so many like athletes from the first Level One movie to the last and everything in between. And I feel like this premiere will be way more special than arguably. Absolutely. And it's going to be a good one. Look forward to it.
For the books.
Sunny, yesterday all my life was rain.
Thanks for listening, y'all. Tell a friend about the podcast if you're enjoying. Tell them about the free movies if you know someone who doesn't know. Podcast.level1.ski, and you can find a link on that page to get to our Vimeo channel where you can watch all of them. Real quick, I'll run back those ways to support. Go find a premier tour stop near you. You can go host your own premier stop if you don't have one near you. We got all sorts of sweet outerwear and innerwear for you. Check out the website if you're looking for something fresh to rep Level One. We will talk to you next week for episode 14 with Will Wesson. Cheers, y'all.
I love you. I love you.